Together we will stand, fight and we'll fall. Come on now, people, let's get on the ball and work together. Come on, let's work together.
Do it till then.
Now, now, people, say now together we will stand. Every boy, girl, woman, and man. Oh, yeah.
Good morning and welcome to Neighbors here on KUMD. A program we've introduced here at KUMD to help us make sense a little bit of the challenging times in which we live. I think Tom Casper had the right idea this morning. He was talking about compost, and I remarked to him that we need to try to make compost out of 2020 as quickly as possible. Get rid of it, put it in the backyard, and hope that some of these things actually turn into something useful, because at this point, it's been a little bit challenging. Dr. Catherine McCarty has been a regular guest on our Neighbors program. She's an epidemiologist and associate dean for research and a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Biobehavioral Health at the University of Minnesota Medical School, Duluth campus. Hey, Kathy, good morning. Good to have you.
Good morning, Lisa.
There you are. All right, push the wrong button. See, I tell you, 2020, man, it's going to kill me. So can you bring us up to speed a little bit? I was listening to the national news last night, and I also went to the CDC website this morning, and I have friends who live in California, Arizona, and Florida, who I have all gone to visit within the past little bit. Two of those friends are vulnerable adults. They have pre-existing health conditions that would mean that COVID-19 would be an extraordinarily bad thing for them to get. So I'm pretty concerned. Minnesota was a lovely pale blue color. It wasn't as pale on the graph as it could have been, but at least it wasn't the threatening dark blue color that many of the states were. Can you give us an idea? Where are we now?
So we have done pretty well in Minnesota. We talk about flattening the curve, and again, I'm going to remind people, flattening the curve doesn't mean it goes away. It just means that normal epidemiologic curve, which is a distribution of when cases happen over time, we've done a much better job of flattening it. So not having to make hard decisions in hospitals about hospital beds and ICU beds and ventilators. So, yeah, we are definitely doing better. Still seeing some outbreaks even here in St. Louis County. They've listed a couple more of our long-term care facilities as places of COVID outbreaks. And here in Minnesota, 90% of our cases, 9 in 10, are in long-term care facilities. And then another large percentage in meatpacking plants, for instance, where people are in close quarters. So where we have not done as good a job keeping COVID from spreading.
Do you have a sense also, we've had and overheard and, you know, in different places and had some really interesting conversations on this program about how Native American people, people of color in general, really have a difficult time with their access to health care and their access, you know, even sometimes to doctors, that sort of thing. Also, they are given, you know, when you live in poverty, you can frequently end up with some kind of pre-existing, they call them comorbidities, diabetes, obesity, some of these things that really make, you know, kind of put you behind the eight ball physically to begin with. I know in some of these communities, the people that are working at the processing plants are some of them are immigrants. Many of them are immigrants. Many of them are quote-unquote, illegal immigrants. They're people of color. Do you think that is also contributing to, because they can't be the only group of people in the state that are working really, really close to each other, can they?
No, you're absolutely right. And for the most part, they don't have access to health care. They don't have health insurance. So you are absolutely right, and much more likely to have these comorbid conditions or something else going on. So they're living in poor circumstances, closer together both in a working situation and at home, poor nutrition, poor access to food, probably no access to normal primary care, a family physician or an internal medicine doc for an adult, that they can keep tabs on things, more likely to have chronic conditions, so they're more likely to get COVID to begin with for all of these reasons. And then people with any sort of a comorbid, an additional condition, whether it be diabetes or asthma or heart disease, on top of COVID, are 20 times as likely to die from COVID once they get it and they're hospitalized. So it's really just bad all around. And why we need to work again in the community to support affordable housing and education and health care, so important, even withstanding COVID, just always important.
Well, and there are a number, I would imagine that there are a number of these folks, if they are, in fact, undocumented immigrants, that are afraid to go anywhere for health care or afraid to go anywhere for maybe food assistance, that kind of thing, because they're obviously worried about what could happen to them if they did. So it's really a kind of an ugly catch-22 for them all the way around.
It sure is.
So some of the states, though, there are a number of states. I think Arizona is one. I'm thinking Florida is one, where the governors have been very vocal about, no, I'm not mandating masks. I'm not telling people they have to wear a mask. And no, we're opening up the economy. And their numbers are spiking now. Is that going to change their minds? Or are they still kind of going, yeah, well, you know, we got to keep people at work or whatever?
Oh, so, yeah, we've talked in the past and we'll continue to. We have to strike this balance, of course, but you have to protect people. And we're talking about individual versus public health rights. And when you have a pandemic, an epidemic, the entire public is at risk. The entire public is affected. So you need to be thinking about the public and not just the individuals within the public. It's that balance of individuals versus public good. And right now, we need to be thinking about the public. And the data are just rock solid in terms of wearing a mask and protecting others. And again, we talk about how you're doing this for others. This is your gift to humanity, is to wear a mask. It's inconvenient. I've got a mask. I wear my mask. Do I like wearing my mask? No, it's hot.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It's my ears. But I'm doing it for others.
And the part where you breathe and it goes, you know, I mean, that's, yeah, it's.
Sometimes it slips off my one ear.
Well, and of course, and that, of course, is meant to encourage all of us to learn how to sew so that we can make ourselves our own customized masks. Now, I'm curious. First of all, I think it would be dandy if you could get a mask that says, or if some ingenious entrepreneur would create masks that say, I'm not wearing this for me, I'm wearing this for you, so that we'd have that visual reminder, because I still think a lot of people don't get it. And I did have to stop into the grocery store a couple of times, and I was horrified that I think there was better mask wearing at Menards than there was at the couple different grocery stores than I've been to. And I just was kind of like, wear a mask. What the hell is the matter with you? Haven't you been watching what's going on?
Yeah, and interesting, I think, you know, my anecdotal, I'm a scientist. I like lots of data. My little data from the grocery shopping that I do is I think people are wearing them less. I think we're seeing COVID fatigue out there and hearing that our numbers are better and thinking, oh, it's over and I don't need to worry about wearing my mask anymore, which is absolutely not the case. And so really that's message number one, is it's still out there, folks. Please keep wearing your mask for everybody else's sake.
Do you think that we are at a point in our community, and I guess I'm asking you to talk about either Duluth Superior or St. Louis County or the state of Minnesota, do you think that we are at a point where we need to, somebody at the local level of government needs to say masks are mandatory, or even individual businesses say masks are mandatory?
I'd love to see individual businesses step up and do that to protect their employees.
I got a kick out of it because, of course, you don't think of it at the time. But people have said, you know, it's no shirt. You know, there used to be the no shirt, no shoes, no service signs in the door. And, you know, and handguns are prohibited on these premises or whatever. So individual businesses do have the right to make those requests of the general public, that this is what you need to do. And wouldn't it make sense in particular, I guess, maybe and I don't know what the repercussions on this could be, but it just seems like since everybody just about has to go to the grocery store to get food, that even vulnerable people have to go to the grocery store to get food, that might be a good place to start?
It would be. Yeah, I think absolutely those places that people are going to, regular grocery stores, pharmacies, yeah, all those sort of places.
Yeah, that would be a good thing. There was an interesting article that I sent to you that it was interesting but depressing. I read it in the Washington Post about how public health officials are leaving their posts. They're being threatened. There's pushback. The first thing I want to ask you is that when we hear about these things, I mean, at the same time that the article says most people agree with, you know, they agreed with the shelter in place, they agreed with the stay at home measures, they agree with the mask wearing, most people agree with this, then we see, you know, a big party that takes place someplace and all of a sudden the COVID numbers are spiking, or health officials feeling that they're getting threatened and they're getting so much pushback that they're going, fine, this isn't worth it. What's going on?
I think, unfortunately, it's become too political. And, of course, it's not political at all. It's public health. And there's been this thought that it's political against churches, for instance. And we've had really, you know, super spreader events, they're called, where because we think our greatest risk is aerosolizing, that in closed spaces, like a church choir singing, there have been a couple really just famous now outbreaks because of this. And it's not political. It's just we're trying to protect people. But this people feeling threatened, not just feeling threatened, being threatened, I think part of it's getting the COVID fatigue. I mean, this has been going on for 3.5 months now. We are tired. We're all tired. I hear lots of things. We're in this together. But the together is different. We all experience this differently. But every single person has been impacted in some way, and some far more than others. We're tired. Some people are just getting angry and frustrated and unfortunately taking it out on others. So if I were going to have one take home today, the first time we ever talked on Neighbors, my take home for that time, and we could go back to that as well, is remember it's not social distancing at all, but physical distancing, and specifically don't socially distance. So I said at that stage, open up your contact list, please, and commit to contacting at least one person you haven't talked to in a long time. So you could revisit that. But what I would like to ask everybody today is to think, be kind. Be kind. Everybody out there is experienced this stress and anxiety in some way. Go out of your way this next week, today, tomorrow, go out of your way to do something kind for somebody, to just say something kind. I was in the grocery store last week, and I had this fantastic checkout guy. He's wearing his mask, so you can't see a face. But I just said, you have a fantastic smile, because I could tell he was smiling.
Exactly.
It was awesome.
People whose eyes crinkle when they smile, they rock, because you can tell they're smiling. Yes. And people
so
with
go out of your way to make somebody smile.
And people with the cheerful attitudes, you know, that really just that kind of remind you about what it used to be like when you'd go into a store and you'd have a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a schmooze, and somebody'd say something, you know, just lighthearted or pleasant or something. And yeah, that's something that we, because this touchiness, the idea that, hey, you guys, you're all in church, but you're going to get sick because you're all in church and you're singing and whatever. There was a time when people would have said, oh, yeah, absolutely, that makes sense. You know, we'll do a teleconference, or we'll do a radio broadcast, or we'll do a, you know, a something else. But instead, it's almost like we're kind of looking for opportunities to be hurt or picked on.
Yeah. Be kind. Be kind to everybody. And remember, these people in leadership positions, oh my gosh, what a tough thing. I mean, no one ever experienced this. Nobody's ever had to make decisions like these. This balance between the economy and public health, lives, actual lives, and the economy. And there are arguments, of course, that the, you know, a down economy affects, obviously affects lives as well. Oh my gosh, what hard decisions. Assume best intentions, but people are doing their best.
And
they
yet
want to keep people alive.
And yet, the mask wearing seems as though it is an obvious compromise. It gets you out and into business, or your business open. It gets everything back to whatever, but people are wearing a mask and they're staying 6 feet apart from each other, and they're doing that to stay safe. And yet, there was a lady in Orange County in California. She faced threats and protests at her home for requiring face coverings in many businesses as cases rose. She issued a mandate, and then it doesn't say who did it, but it says that the mandate was softened to a recommendation a week later. So there's something about us as a people right now where we don't trust health officials. Well, it seems like we almost don't trust anybody anymore, that they're giving us facts, real information that we need. We don't trust them. We assume that there's an ulterior motive. What's your ulterior motive in getting somebody to wear a mask?
I know I don't understand that. I'm just going to remind people again, there's great evidence masks are good. And they'll help us into the future. They will be helpful for not spreading this influenza virus when it comes around again, which it will. And remind people again, get your flu shot.
There was a wonderful thing on the nightly news the other night that it was like an infrared photograph or something of somebody just speaking and talking, and you could see, you know, the smoke or the vapor, whatever, coming out of their mouth. And then they wore a mask, and it was just completely gone. All of it was gone. And
oh,
so,
yeah, yeah.
And I thought, oh, well, yeah, obviously. So whatever droplets, et cetera, you know, that you might... I mean, anybody who's ever done musical theater, man, you know that the people in the front row, it happens. You just got to be aware, because when you sing or speak once in a while,
it does. You can see it in the lights.
Yes, exactly. So you just got to be safe. So what about some of these states now where they are wondering about their opening back up again? Does that mean that we as a country need to start having conversations again about what are some of the national conversations that we need to be having right now? Because it almost seems like nobody's really running the show. Dr. Fauci continues to say, wear a mask, it's not safe yet. And the world seems to be running roughshod over him, according to an article that I looked at this morning from the New York Times. Sweden has refused, you know, they refused to lock down back in the day. They had roughly twice as many infections and five times as many deaths as Denmark, Finland, and Norway. And the overall trend is clear that this was a big mistake on Sweden's part, and Sweden's kind of in trouble with its neighbors, I understand. They thought their immunity was high enough that they were going to be fine. Wrong.
Yeah. So I think our conversation really needs to be about, we're in this for the long haul, although we're getting vaccines further along in the testing phase. For them to be widely available for us, we're still a ways off, probably. New treatment as well, so this is great. Study out of UK, a drug called dexamethasone is used for arthritis, is actually shown to be really helpful because of, you know, there's a lot of inflammation. We've talked about this, why these lung issues and why people go on a ventilator for so long. But there's a new dexamethasone, which has been out there for a long time. It's shown to be really helpful in hospitalized patients, like seriously ill patients. So that's really cool. But I think our conversation needs to be, we're in this for the long haul. And so how do we make adjustments for the long haul? And we just plan on it. I know for myself, working at the university, if we can work from home, we are told to just expect to do that for a while. I expect I'll do most of my teaching online for the fall, probably into the new year. And just whatever can be done from home, done from home. So people adjusting to that. You know, if we initially brought your stuff home from the office and you thought, oh, I'm going to be home for a month or two. And, you know, here we are 3.5 months later, and it'll probably be another, I don't know, could be another 8 months that I'm doing that. So adjusting your mindset to thinking about we are in this for the long haul, and what does that mean? We're doing a lot more by telehealth visits that a lot of times insurance wouldn't cover, and they are covering now. Hopefully that's going to continue. So some good things. And I know some businesses, I heard a great story yesterday, and some businesses are really deciding, hey, we're actually going to close down some offices because this is less expensive for us. Instead of having bricks and mortar, people can do this at home, and we've worked out how to do this pretty well. So those sort of conversations, and how do we support that? And when you think about rural America, we talk about health disparities and people of color, and we've got so much to do on that front. But we end up having some health disparities with working from home for people who live rurally and don't have good broadband access. And so thinking about those infrastructure sort of projects that need to be done to support this continued new way of doing business that I suspect is going to continue.
Do you think it's difficult for, and I'm not pointing at anybody in particular because I can't think of any specific instances, but do you think that it's difficult for local leaders, maybe particularly because they don't have as much input maybe as statewide or national leaders do from other people calling to tell them exactly how they should be doing their jobs. Do you think it's difficult for them to reimagine this kind of, you know, how do we make this work going forward, or that the mindset is maybe just how do we get back to what was before? How do we get back to, air quotes, normal?
Yeah, I think you're right. The people are thinking that at some stage you're going to go back to what they were, which is not likely. And we need leaders who can think, all right, what can this look like once we're past the real urgency? What can we learn? What can we take from this experience going forward? What is our new normal? And help to define and grow to that new normal where we're all... where the majority of us are on the same page.
Right. This is, when you were talking about teaching, this is a particularly challenging time, of course, for the university that was facing financial concerns before COVID and before you had to send, you know, the entire student population home. Well, universities, colleges and universities in all the systems across the state, the University of Minnesota system, the MinSCU system, really doing some struggling. The public schools are going to be getting additional information, but right now they've been tasked with preparing how to do, for the fall, be ready to A, do everything online, B, do everything in person, C, do a hybrid of both. Remind me what the university is asking. I think that the university is kind of wants to do the C option, if I recall correctly, which is sort of a hybrid of both. Is that right?
It is. And so it's same thing for the medical school here. But my son's an undergrad, and he's still waiting to hear from professors. So there was an announcement from President Gabel a week ago Friday, I think, that they're of this sort of this hybrid approach where online, if the professors want, if they could do it online, they can say, yep, I'm going to do it online. And if they can do it in person with changing schedules, so still have to have that physical distancing. And as an example, we have 65 students in the per year in our first and second year medical student class here in Duluth. And we have what we call our first and second year classrooms, and each one holds about 80, 90 students. But to have 6 feet of physical distancing, we could have no more than 15 or 20 people in a classroom at the same time. So if you're giving lectures, you're either having to do this in separate groups or just have at different times, which is probably really not feasible, which is why we're looking at doing most of our sort of standard lectures, either recorded or on Zoom, and then you can do these breakout sessions, which are really cool. And for the undergrads, they're doing the same thing. For my son, they say they're talking about having classes from 8 a.m. till 10 p.m., Monday through Saturday, to be able to have separate sections and have distancing in the classrooms. So still to be seen, and the professors get to decide themselves. So my son's just waiting to hear, like, I still don't know if I'm actually going to be in Minneapolis in the fall. We don't know.
Oh, yeah. Well, and of course, parents, there are parents, and of course, there are people that are hardwired. They want to know what's coming next, and this has got to be so ruthlessly difficult for them, because it's just not, most people can struggle through a situation that runs counter to how they process the world, and they can struggle through, you know, for a period of time, but yeah, this is just going to be, this is just going to be the way it is, and we don't know when it's going to end. It's just got to be maddening.
Yep. Take a deep breath. Smile.
Exactly. Smiles, everyone, and definitely be kind. Kathy, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's been so wonderful to have you as a guest on this program to talk about the science, to talk about the facts of the COVID outbreak, and also, of course, to be reminded of things like be kind. And this is a ridiculous time, and the very best we can do, if we can, is try to laugh a little bit where we can and make the very best of it, and just keep taking one deep breath after another and try to do the next right thing.
Yep. It's been wonderful to be in your neighborhood with you, Lisa.
Thanks. And as soon as either as soon as this is over, or, well, we have masks, we have dogs. Yeah, we'll go for a walk at a 6 foot distance, and with the dogs and the masks, it'll be absolutely lovely. I'm looking forward to it.
I'd like that.
Dr. Catherine McCarty, our guest this morning on Neighbors. She's an epidemiologist, an associate dean for research, and a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Biobehavioral Health at the University of Minnesota Medical School on the Duluth campus. She joined us this morning as our guest on Neighbors.